The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Hey, it's your favorite priest and a rabbi coming back at you at Stuart, Florida. We are on WSTU 1450, as you know. This is Father Christian Anderson from St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and I am joined by the wonderful, adventurous, and also the man whose favorite movie is The Notebook, Rabbi Durbin. He loves long walks on the beach. His favorite color is purple, and he takes good care of his children, so he is a man that we all aspire to be. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. Today we got an awesome show. Part of the reason is I think we got our biggest guest to date. All of our guests have been wonderful, but you know, today we got a wonderful guest who's going to be joining us because you and I have been talking about marriage. We've been talking about the state of organized religion in the United States of America, and we're bringing on a special guest, Father Alberto Coutier, who has written books related to a lot of these topics, who's had his own experience from unique experiences in regards to marriage. And so I'm excited. And I remember you and I just the other day were getting we had a photo shoot over at Gilbert's Cafe, and we're sitting there and we're all dressed up in our nines. You had your prayer shawl, you had your kippah. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did. You did. Okay. Good. Impressed.
Good. Thank you. That would have been a major faux pas. At this point in our relationship, that would have been.
Well,
bad.
You'd have 16 million Jews that would call you and complain.
Well, at least we get some phone callers, so that'd be
that
good.
That's true.
That'd be good. 772-220-9788. By the way, so we're there, and all these people are taking pictures of us. We had a photographer whose flashes are going. Then other people are curious, like, what's going on? And they're coming over, and some people are like videoing on their phone, and they're all curious. About
well, it's great outreach. It was great outreach.
Yes. It was a photography evangelism, you know, because people are like, who are these guys? Where are they from?
Well, I mean, you know, the interesting thing there is, although people can think, you know, who are these people, you are considerably more visible than I am.
Because I'm 6'6".
And the collar.
Oh, right. But you had your prayer shawl and your kippah as well. So you were visible as well.
I was fairly visible.
Yes. So we're in there, and then we took pictures where we had like coffees in our hand, and then at one point we thought we'd get a real risky, and we actually had two beers in our hand as well, because we are doing this for our podcast. This will all be moving to a podcast quite soon, maybe within the next week, called A Priest and a Rabbi. So you'll be able to find that on iTunes, but we need a good photo for it. So we had the wonderful photography skills of
one of our members, Steve Rosansky, who availed his time and his expertise and was just wonderful throughout the whole process.
Yeah, it was he was just fantastic. He sent us the pictures this morning. So stay tuned for on iTunes and probably Stitcher and other places where you can get a podcast. Look for A Priest and a Rabbi. Where a lot of these shows will be moved to there, and so we can make this available to anyone, not just those who are in this radius or tune in by going out to the website of WSTU. So today, to take on these topics of relationships, of marriage, of celibacy, and the state of organized religion, and we'll probably be focusing most on really the church and the synagogue in America in the 21st century, we'll have Padre Alberto Coutier joining us. He is the rector of St. Benedict's Episcopal Church down the Diocese of Southeast Florida. He's been in full-time ministry for over 24 years. But how you may know him, though, is that this fine young man-ish has been who's entered the millions of homes throughout the world with his television and radio talk shows. I mean, he has had columns in the press. In 1998, he became the first person of any faith tradition to host a daily talk show as part of a major network on international television. So he wasn't doing this on like some cable access thing like Between Two Ferns. He was on Telemundo, that's with NBC Universal, Comcast. He later appeared with Fox. And so that earned him the title of Father Oprah.
Father Oprah.
Or Padre Oprah. And that would, those would be the headlines, and you would see on New York Times and Newsweek. And he started a variety of other shows as well, including an English talk show in 2011 in New York City. The city's so nice, they named it twice. He gets picked up, and they bring him on CNN and other places where he talks about controversial topics like justice, faith, and religion, of course. At one point, this dude was the CEO and general director of PAX Catholic Communication. So that is huge. I mean, that's from 2001 to 2009 while being a full-time priest. So at that point, he was a Catholic priest. And then he had a huge transition in his life. So if you all don't know about this, he had a huge transition in his life, and he transferred to the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And now he is married and has three gorgeous children and a cat. So if we ask him the question if he's a cat or a dog guy, he's a cat. So he was originally ordained a priest in the Roman Catholic Church in 95. But then in 2009, he became a member of the Episcopal Church, which is the denomination that I'm a part of as well. So he's also the author of three books, working on a fourth. And today we'll really be like looking at some of the books, most especially the one Real Life, Real Love, which is a more of a self-help book on relationships, maybe referencing Dilemma, which came out in 2012. That's his personal memoir about what that was like to move from the Catholic Church to the Episcopal Church and get married and have children. And then Talking God in 2016, how his it's his research on the 21st century church, how it communicates with the digital age, which I think has always spiked our interest here. So without further ado, can we please bring on, we got him on the phone because he's so hard to get because he's all over the world and touring all over places. We got Padre Alberto Coutier. Bienvenidos to the show, my brother.
Good morning. It's so great to be with you guys. It's exciting to hear all that stuff. I just hope that after you did all of that, people won't be disappointed with what they're actually going to get. It's just me. It's just Father Albert. You're talking about touring all over the world. It's funny, yeah, touring all over plantation between nursing homes and hospitals and visiting people and taking care of everything that's happening here. But, yeah, it is exciting work.
Yeah, you're down a plantation, and you have a really healthy church, a very thriving church, and one that I have to say that one that I really respect it tremendously is that it's an extremely diverse church. One that I think a lot of churches around America would I don't want to say be envious, but would love to be able to create that. And I know we work at that at St. Mary's. How do we create more of a welcoming environment where you have so many different cultures and ethnicities and races feeling welcome to worship openly together? And you have done an incredible job of continuing and creating that environment for you all.
We have a banner hanging on our church. On one of our church walls there as you come into the sanctuary, and it gives you kind of a rundown of that. We've got little flags. I don't know if they're like, 4x6, but they're small flags. There's 55 different countries represented every time we come together for worship.
It's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
So it's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it is, it's truly the kingdom of God, and as I've once heard someone say, it's what heaven will look like, so it's just a beautiful thing, and thank you for inspiring us all to be able to create that in our own churches and synagogues. So, listen, my brother and father, last week, the rabbi and I were talking about relationships. We were talking about a lot about marriage and what it's like to be a cleric, to be clergy in the room where you're working in a premarital context with these folks. And we're curious, that you've had two different perspectives of how you've approached this. When you were a Catholic priest, you were obviously practicing a celibacy. You were not married. And then you were working with couples young and old. And then later on, of course, as you became an Episcopal priest, you were married with three kids. So how is that? Has your perspective changed of how you approach to really lead people towards a lifelong, everlasting marriage under God's love?
It's interesting. For about 15 years as a Roman Catholic priest, I was very young when I was ordained. I was 25. So imagine when I first became a priest, a lot of the couples that came to me to get married were older than me.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I talked to them, and yeah, of course, you give them the basic speech. After a while, you realize that there's only so much you can do as a rabbi, as a priest, as a religious leader. a lot of couples today need what I consider to be professional premarital counseling. And in almost every situation I've been in since early in my priesthood, I've always sent couples to get some kind of professional premarital counseling. You know, whether it's provided by their insurance or not, or sometimes it's a matter of having trained couples, married couples in your parish or synagogue that could offer this to couples. They need to talk about basic things. And at the beginning, you know, you come out of seminary, you think you've got all the answers, you know. In the Christian world, Rabbi, we call this a Jesus complex. You know, we think we're going to save the world, you know. so we come out, you know, you come out of seminary thinking, oh, I can take care of all this. But you really can't. Mm-hmm. There's only so much you can offer. So what I've always done is I've always relied on couples. And even now here at St. Benedict, we have a great marriage ministry where we have couples that are trained to basically meet with the couples and talk with them. Certainly the perspective is very different. When you are a celibate priest and you're kind of, you know, looking at the couples around you and how they live their marriage, you know, the first one's obviously your own parents and grandparents. I was very blessed to come from three what I would consider to be excellent marriages. My paternal grandparents were married 54 years before my grandmother died, and on my mom's side, they were married 58 years. Wow. My parents were married, happily married, until my father died of cancer rather young, but they were married over 30 years. So all of the couples that were closest to me lived what I consider to be long-term stable marriages, which is not what our society is experiencing today. Hmm. The great majority of our kids grow up either in divorce homes, or many of them are the result of situations where marriages haven't been so healthy, so good. And so obviously these are the young people who come to us, and they want to know, how do I do this? Hmm. So yes, as a celibate priest, I had my own ideals as to what marriage was. As a married priest, I can tell you my own experience does inform the way that I speak to people, because I think after 10 years of marriage, you know, and I'm married 10 years this year, believe it or not, as a married priest, I've been able to experience not just personally my own married life with my spouse and my children. I've been able to experience the stress that happens, you know, when you are in a committed married relationship and your goal is to try to always make the other person you know, happy, and to be able to do everything you can to bring that stability and that joy to everyday living as a married person. So, yes, I do think there's different perspectives, and it does inform you. And I think people, in a way, appreciate it more, because when I was a celibate priest, they kind of look at me and say, well, what does this young guy know about marriage?
Exactly.
You know? Mm-hmm. You can talk about your relationship with God, and obviously that's one thing that I don't think people realize. Celibate priests are very good marriage counselors. Don't get me wrong.
Why is that?
Because they talk about a basic fundamental human relationship. You know, as a celibate priest, you know, the whole focus of celibacy is that you are in a relationship, that you are giving yourself exclusively to God, and that relationship is a lifelong commitment. And obviously, you know, when you're able to do that and talk about that, there's some relationship to marriage. There's no doubt about that, the covenant of marriage and the whole idea of the promise of celibacy. But, you know, at the end of the day, the reason I guess I wrote my first book, for Real Life, Real Love, was because I realized as a priest, people needed to know that it's much easier to get along with God than it is to get along with other human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, relationships with God, I mean, God loves us unconditionally, regardless of what tradition you come from, whether you're a Jew or a Christian or a Muslim or any other faith tradition. We pretty much agree that God loves us and that God's love is unconditional to us. The problem is, how do we relate to each other when love is not so unconditional, when there are, you know, personalities and conflicts and different ways of perceiving reality? And so I discovered early on that people came to me not about their relationship issues with God, and not even about their spirituality issues. People came to me about their human relationships. And that's why almost immediately in my talk show world, work, whether it was in TV or radio or in the press, advice columns that I wrote 6 days a week, I can tell you all of the stuff that I dealt with, 80% of it had to do with human relationships, and a lot of it with romantic or marriage or issues of, you know, should I get married to this person or not, or should I stay married to this person or not? All of those issues is what I dealt with the most.
And did you find as a Catholic priest that your work through marriage counseling was semi-limited?
I think it's always limited. I think it still is now.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is that people don't come to you for your personal experience, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
People come to you because they need a fix, especially in our society today. As you know, everything is quick fix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't want to wait for an oil change. People go to the place where they get it express. You know, mm-hmm. everything is express.
And through the transition from being a celibate Catholic priest to an Episcopal priest, just the wealth of information and experience that you bring of, you know, working through a relationship, being of that mindset of being able to further counsel or, you know, I mean, as clergy, it's not that I give advice certainly we do give advice, but, you know, not to say this is the way of a healthy relationship, but have you considered this, that, or the other
right.
based on your own sense of, you know, relationship challenges or successes?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt that the wealth of information and the wealth of knowledge that you acquire from actually experiencing, you know, living in a marriage day in and day out is invaluable. And so I don't think any seminary or even any to tell you the truth, any hardcore psychology courses or anything or counseling courses can give you the skills or the complete know-how of how you deal with couples when they come to you. I think every couple is different. I think every relationship is different.
Mm-hmm.
And when people ask, you know, well, what do you do, Father, whatever, I always try to, I think that there's a boundary. You can only really share so much about your own experience, because the truth is that that couple is sitting before you there. It's a completely unique and different couple than you are with your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want to offer them is you want to offer them the best for them, not the best for you.
Oh, absolutely. I
can share with them, hey, you know what, guys, you know, I suggest you do some of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like all my couples, I always tell them, you need a date night. You need time together. You need time for intimacy. You need time to communicate, you need to pay attention to the details. I mean, all that stuff is so important. And I know there's a lot of people listening to us right now thinking, yeah, that's important, but do we do it?
Yeah.
Do we do it? Do we actually take the time to be with our spouse and listen to them? Do we take the time to understand what's happening in their lives? Because I believe a lot of us don't.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I, as a rabbi, and certainly I would think, you know, Father Anderson, for you and, you know, it's that healthy balance to kind of come forward and say it's not about me, you know,
and it's
about the wedding couple, and it's about them who come forward to really share in a sacred and beautiful moment for their lives that they are embarking on together, and to really remember as we counsel and as we go through, you know, it's not about me. That it is about this sacred relationship, which, as we know, each relationship is sacred. Each relationship is important and is special.
Father, have you ever had the? You know, we talked about this last week. Have you ever had the time when you were either a Catholic priest or now as an Episcopal priest, where you had to, you felt like this couple is just not ready. They are showing some major red flags here, and you might have kind of. Answer this earlier when you talked about sending people to professional therapists, but that in the back of your mind you had a thought of like, I don't think this is strong enough to go the distance. Has that?
I agree. Oh yeah.
And what have you done when that comes up?
It's interesting. I'm glad you asked that, because we don't always express our gut feeling, if you will.
Right.
You know, you've got that pastoral gut feeling where you're thinking, oh no, should I say something? When I see that it's problematic, I usually say something. When I see that it's just a, you know, maybe my own perceptions that may be or may not be accurate, I tend to keep it to myself, to tell you the truth. I do think that all couples have to work through problems. I think all couples have to work through incompatibilities. We have a great instrument. I don't know if you use it at St. Mary's or if Rabbi, if you use something similar to it, but we, in the Christian churches, Roman Catholic churches and Protestant churches like the Episcopal Church, we use a thing called focus sometimes.
Hmm.
It's F-O-C-C-U-S. It's like it's a premarital inventory, basically.
Hmm.
And we're basically, it's a compatibility test where couples get to express, if they do it honestly, the differences that they have and the things they need to deal with before marriage. And I think that's a very valuable instrument. And certainly my couples that do marriage preparation and marriage training in our parish, because we have so many, they do meet with them regularly, and they do this kind of thing. And they find it to be very, very effective in communicating with couples and helping them through some of the issues they have to deal with mm-hmm. before marriage.
All right, so I got to ask you. So, what you know, you experienced basically life as a major leader in the church who was on, you know, you had your own talk show, you were leading a radio show, you were leading a big parish, and then you know, then you started to, I'm assuming, and I don't want to change your story here, but you began to, I'm assuming, at some point began to fall in love, and so therefore, I'm sure that brought a lot of interesting dynamics to your own prayer life and meditation and just conflict resolution of what do I do with this? I know that you tell me if that movement was that falling in love and feeling like God was giving you a call to marriage. Was that also mixed in with also, I feel, a call to a different denomination, or really was the love you started to feel for your beautiful wife, was that really the catalyst that had you to start really discerning the change, the transition?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it all happened simultaneously. And when I say simultaneously, I'm talking about a process of years, okay? This is not a matter of, a lot of people think, oh, you know, you're a Roman Catholic, and then you become an Episcopal, and you get married. Well, it isn't quite that way. It is a long process. It was theological issues and issues of inclusion in the church. When I started working, my talk show was 1998, remember. I became an Episcopalian 11 years later, in 2009. And I can tell you, almost from the get-go, when I started at Telemundo, I began to feel lots of incompatibility with a lot of the Roman Catholic understandings of the world, if you will. And now I'm talking about issues of contraception being a mortal sin, issues of, you know, how we treat gays in the sacraments, you know, are people, who's allowed to commune and who's not. I mean, all those issues back to back all became very much part of what I was experiencing. And of course, then in the process of all of that, human sexuality issues, you know, how do we perceive the gift of sexuality and you know, is it something that is reserved, only to, you know, people that are non-clerics, for example, in the case of the Roman Catholic Church, well, priests, you know, cannot even have the experience of being romantically involved or in marriage. So a lot of that was, for me, it became like, what's going on? And I don't think that people realize this, because obviously my case was so public, but 120,000 or more, actually I would say more now, this was 10 years ago, 120,000 Roman Catholic priests have left to marry.
Wow. Oh, wow.
You know, significant numbers of them have exercised their ministries in other denominations. Some have just, you know, lived the rest of their lives as lay people, basically, you know, saying, well, you know, since I can't function as a cleric in my church, I will just stay here and act like a lay person. So that was not an option for me, because I felt very connected from a very, very early age in my life to people of other denominations and traditions. So I never felt like the Episcopal Church was so foreign to me. I had friends that were Presbyterian pastors, for example. I had friends that were Methodists. I had friends that were in Lutherans, friends that were many different denominations. And I always considered them to be my colleagues in ministry. So to me, the transition to the Episcopal Church was a natural one. It wasn't like, oh, this is like this huge, big, you know, change in my life. I mean, we have the same sacramental system. We have pretty much the same day-to-day job description. I mean, my job has not changed from what I did as a Roman Catholic priest. Basically, I do the same exact thing.
Was it a painful transition or a smooth transition? Was it one that you had said to yourself, almost, I don't want to say as a crisis of faith, but as I'm challenged by certain, you know, elements beyond my control? Was it a painful transition for you personally?
I don't think it was painful. I think it was a change of culture. Let me give you an example. You grow up in a club. You grow up in a family, in a group of people who kind of know each other, and you become part of a group, and that group is a strong group, and that's what I think happens in the Roman Catholic Church. It's sociologically very strong. You know, it's very structured, very focused on the Pope and the whole hierarchical system, and it's very, very established, if you will. You know, if you think of institutional church, you know, it's heavily institutional. Mm-hmm. In the Episcopal Church, we have a lot of the same Catholic stuff, you know, mixed together with a lot of the Protestant stuff, because we've got kind of both traditions in this one church. That's why we call ourselves a bridge tradition. You know, we've got the Catholic and the Reformed in one church. But then at the same time, it's not that institutionally heavy. Mm-hmm. It looks more like the early church looked. You know, like the Church of Jesus and the Apostles, where the local bishop, you know, and the local congregations basically defined the church. It wasn't so centralized in another place like in Rome, you know, or this and that and the other. So you'll hear a lot of Episcopalians say, you know, I'm Catholic, but just Catholic, you know, not Roman Catholic, but Catholic, because we share that same tradition from the early Christian times. And so for me, it's funny. I had priest friends in the Episcopal Church since very early in my priesthood, who often said to me, you know, oh, Albert, you know, one day when you choose to get married, maybe you'll be here with us, you know. So it was always, in a way, in the back of my mind.
Sure.
But it was also, remember, I had more pressure than most Roman Catholic priests because I was such a public Roman Catholic person. So every time anything came up Roman Catholic, whether it was, the sex abuse crisis, or whether it was homosexuality in the priesthood, or whatever issue was being talked about this week on CNN, you know, or on any other network, I was the one that had to kind of go out there and talk about these issues. So I think that also had a huge impact on my life, because as I look back now, I realize, you know, after a while you get tired of defending the indefendable. You get what I'm saying?
Sure, absolutely.
And you get tired of always trying to make the institution look right when the institution, you know, really, as we're seeing now, you know, wasn't really doing right by many people. And so, you know, I always had to be, if you were, some kind of official spokesperson. And I did it for the Latino world mostly, but I also did quite a bit of it in English. And after a while, you kind of get tired of that. In my case, I think it all came together where, you know, at one point I knew I was in love with my wife, and I knew that I was not going to live a double life. I was not going to say to people, here I am, this, supposed to be the celibate priest, but I'm going to have this hidden girlfriend, you know, forever. Which I think some people in the church would have been comfortable with that, by the way, because I think, you know, there's an acceptance of that kind of secrecy in some ways.
Okay.
But I didn't want to live that way. I just it didn't jive with me. The second thing is I knew that I was not in the right denomination, if you will, if I have to exclude people from communion, exclude people from the sacraments, tell people, no, you know, you're in, you're out. And that's one of the things that attracted me to the Episcopal Church, that we are open to everyone, you know, that that we share the altar where men and women are able to be ordained ministers in the gospel and are able to serve God as priests, where we have people at every level of leadership of the church. You know, we're inclusive of everyone and we're welcoming of everyone. And we believe that the sacraments are for everyone. And that meant a lot to me. Because remember, when you're on TV every day and you're getting the letter from that one divorced lady every day who's, you know, had made a mistake and got married at a very early age and then remarried and is living a beautiful marriage, but, you know, is now unable to go to communion because she's not married in the church because she's unable to be married in the church. You know, when you get that every day from all over the world, after a while, it begins to get to your soul.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Absolutely.
And then you realize,
absolutely,
wait a minute, is God really this small, or does God want us to be bigger? And so if you ask me, was the transition motivated by what? It was motivated by a lot of things.
Sure.
And
sure,
it was a transition that took years, because, by the way, in the year 2000, I could have become an Episcopalian, to tell you the truth, because I was pretty much ready. But with all of the pressure and everything going on with having to save face for the institution that I belong to, it was very hard for me to say, hey, I got to get out of here. You know, maybe if I look back, maybe I should have. But I can tell you that God's time is always perfect, and I don't have a single regret. I think that everything happens for a reason, the way things happened, you know. The way it was revealed that I had a girlfriend, by the way, was paparazzi following us on the beach one day, and those pictures were revealed, and then I basically had to tell everyone, hey, yeah, guess what? It's true. The priest is in love, and I'm moving on, and, you know, I apologize if I've offended you, but, you know, this is something I've been going through personally. I mean, my confessor knew, my spiritual director knew, the people closest to me knew that I was in that transition. My Episcopal bishop knew that, you know, that this was going on. But it was a hard thing, you know, to just kind of say one day, oh, I'm getting up today and I'm taking off. And
how did the public respond? Because, you know, you had not just your flock as an average priest rabbi would have to respond to. You had an international audience to respond to.
Global Village.
Yeah, Global sure. Village. And so once that hit the papers and the paparazzi got a hold of that, what was that response like, and how did you deal with that, especially your wife as well? How did you all kind of just like hunker down and be resilient enough to take whatever came your way?
Well, you know, it's funny. Ended up really at my producer's house in Hollywood over there in Venice Beach, which you're very familiar with.
Yeah.
And to kind of get away from all the media attention for several days, it was exhausting, really. It was exhausting because, you know, a lot had to be done. I obviously had to meet with my bishop and turn in my letter of resignation and say, I'm moving on. And I was told, you know, you can't do this. Your ideas have to be reprogrammed. You know, something must be wrong with you. When I told them that I was becoming an Episcopalian and I was moving on and I was thinking of continuing my ministry as a married priest, they looked at me like I was speaking Chinese and basically said to me, you have to be reprogrammed. Wow. Just like that. Reprogram, like if you're a computer disk, that you could just take it out of the computer, reprogram it, and stick it back in. So I said, listen, I've got to be honest with you. If I could reprogram it, many of these ideas I would have, but I've been dealing with this for a long time, and this is just, you know, the climax of years and years and years of thought and this and that and struggle. And I said, and I thank you all, and I love you, and I have nothing against you, but this is where I feel God is calling me. That was the hardest part, because you're basically telling your superiors and the people that have been, you know, your colleagues and coworkers, and, well, I can't stay here. I need to move on.
Yeah.
And when they don't understand it or they can't accept it, there's a lot of tension in that. But I've got to tell you, I felt a great freedom when I made the decision. And that's where I feel God speaks, because when you make a decision that's that difficult and you do it with peace, and you feel peace in your heart, you realize, you know, that's a pretty good sign God's leading you there.
Yeah.
Was it challenging, and was it painful for your parishioners as you left the church?
I think my parishioners, you know, the spectrum, full spectrum. Some totally loved it and accepted it and thought it was a great thing that the priest could fall in love, have his family, and move on. Mm. And some still to this day, you know, feel like they were betrayed, like it wasn't, you know, the right way to leave, like it wasn't the right thing to do. So you have, it's full spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I meet people on the street, you know, that are old Cuban ladies that are 85, 90 years old. I'm a Cuban American, so a lot of the Cuban community know me down here. And they'll say, oh, Padre Alberto, I support you 100%. I'm so happy for you. You know, how are your children? How's your wife? How's your family? And there's other people that you kind of look at them and you could tell they look the other way.
they're not happy with you.
So that's fine. You know, life is like that. It's like being part, like I tell you, it's a lot like being part of a club, and some people just can't accept those who move on.
Sure. If anyone is wanting to ask any questions, because there's a lot of good stuff going on here, especially a question for Father Roberto, please 772-220-9788. Please give us a call, and we'll get you on air here. And then final question before we move on, because we also want to talk about the state of organized religion in the 21st century, which you have written a book more about from a preaching perspective. But just real quickly, you know, as I think this could, you have been a very busy man your whole life. You've had a lot of complex issues that have fallen on your plate. And then at a certain point, you invited a family into that and have three kids in this, and your wife and a cat. And then how do you, and you're still quite the busy man, even though that you've really focused on being a parish priest, you still have media stuff that comes your way. How do you, and I think this is a good question for any mother or father who just lives a busy life, how do you find the balance so you can do your first ministry, which is your family, but also be a responsible parish priest, and then all these other side projects that sometimes come your way that would be a great thing to get out God's word and the God's love?
Well, the first thing I would say is Google Assistant. You know, keep a tight calendar. You know, be organized. I've always had more than a full-time job. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. They always say that if you want to get something done, get a busy person to do it. So I've always been the kind of person that I've had more on my plate than it's, you know, the 40-hour job. So what I would say to you is get organized. Set your priorities. You know, if your marriage is a priority, you're going to make time for your marriage. If your children are a priority, you're going to make time for them. Like, for example, I can tell you the people in my parish are extremely supportive of me, and they know I have a wife, they know I have a family, so they understand when I can't make it to every single event, every single time. And I've heard them even say, no, Father, we understand, you know, you need to do this with your kids, or you need to do this with your wife. They get it. Whereas, you know, some people may never get it, but that's okay. You have to not be a people pleaser. I was for many, many years a people pleaser. As a matter of fact, perhaps the reason I stayed so long where I used to be is because I felt I had to be a people pleaser. And then when I realized that that was not my role in life, that I had to just please God and be happy with myself, I started realizing, okay, you don't have to live according to everybody else's standards. You can live according to just what God is asking you, which is enough.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. I think parents need to be honest with themselves and say, hey, you know, do I have more time for social media and Netflix and all that than I have for my kids? Because if you do, that's a problem.
Right.
You need to spend time listening to your kids.
Yeah.
The big challenge today is the phone, of course. We're always on the phone. And, you know, when you go to dinner, you know, are you people off the phone so you can actually look at each other and talk to each other? Or is everyone on their device?
But I know that you're quite a busy guy where you get a lot of work done on your phone. I've been with you at certain functions where I know you're not just sitting there, you know, playing tic-tac-toe with a friend, you know, over in, tradition, but that you're getting some work done. So there is a balance there, which is you multitask
a lot.
We're all
multitaskers. In this society, we're all multitaskers. Whoever tells you they're not, I mean, they're lying. We're all multitasking all the time. Our brain, as a matter of fact, part of the study that I did for my thesis, you know, I did my Doctor of Ministry degree recently over at the University of South in Suwannee, and one of the things I focused on is the result that you see there in that book, Talking God. It's really a book about communication today. It's about how our brains function. It's been proven, you know, through brain imaging that the way that we multitask today stimulates parts of our brain that we never used before. And the way that we perceive information and receive information and even the way we offer information has changed, and it does impact our brains. And so we just need to be aware of that. We're in a multitask society. We're all multitasking all the time. And how we deal with that is very important, because relationships and real people get stuck in the middle of all of that.
Absolutely.
So at our home, I can tell you this, we've made a rule that when we're sitting down at the dinner table, no one has a device, not the children, not the parents, nobody. And it's time for us. And we'll listen to some music in the background, maybe as we're eating, or we'll do something like that, but not, no TV is on, no tablet is on, no phone is being used, and we're just sharing with each other. Those are the challenges that we have. I don't like, for example, and I don't know if this happens to the rabbi in the synagogue, but I don't like people saying, oh, when you come into the church or you come into the synagogue, whatever, turn off your cell phones and turn, you know, I don't like to do that anymore, because the fact is we have many, many of our, you know, mega churches and big religious groups that are now using their devices as part of attracting people to their fold and telling people the exciting things that are happening. So I like people to post something on Facebook in the middle of a sermon or to post something on Twitter.
It's challenging from a Judaic perspective, because so much of technology now has been embraced, where people bring in iPads to services. You know, to the average person, it may look as if you're on social media, whereas what you're actually doing is accessing the prayer book that happens to be on the iPad. And just, you know, different modes of access of communication and access to prayer.
That is a great, great, great transition to the next part. Let's just take a quick 30-second break here, Padre, and we'll come back and start to talk about really the church and the organized religion in the 21st century, and is there, can it thrive, or is it just surviving? So we'll be able to get a couple questions with you as we near the end of the show. So stay tuned. Hey everyone, it's Father Christian. I want to invite you to a brand new YouTube channel that I have started called Your Favorite Christian. It's on YouTube. Go in there, check it out, subscribe. I release a new vlog every single Monday. It's following around the adventures of a wacky priest and getting into the community and learning new things and talking about everything from relationships to pop culture to major acts of faith. So come join us or come join me on Your Favorite Christian on YouTube. Okay, we are back. It's the rabbi and a priest, or a priest and a rabbi. Yes, and today we got a second priest, Padre Alberto Cudier, who has been a part of two denominations, the Roman Catholic Church and now the Episcopal Church here in the United States. And we spent the first part, or really two-thirds of the show, focusing on relationships and marriage and what it was like, really, for also Padre Alberto to be moving from a celibate life into a married life and the differences there and how does he use that in his ministry, those changes. But another focus that Padre Alberto has taken on in his writings, because before, Real Life, Real Love was really more about relationships, and then Dilemma, which he wrote in 2012, was a personal memoir on that transition. But Talking God in 2016 touches about you know, the 21st century, how the 21st century church communicates with the digital age, which I'm sure you could probably fit in the 21st century synagogue in there as well.
But, you know, it's an interesting thing as well, because Ron Wolfson did a book a few years ago called Relational Judaism. And I think, you know, very, very similar, whether it be through the church or through the synagogue, that, you know, today's understanding and today's access through religious lines is all based on it's relational. It's based on relationships, whether it be relationships with God, relationships with human beings. Ultimately, all it goes to the same source.
So, Padre, and I just wanted to jump in here and just say, if you guys have any questions regarding this topic, please give us a call. We love color 772-220-9788. We are here at WSTU 1450 AM. Padre, this is a question that comes up all the time or whatever, is that, you know, is the church in America, specifically in America, because we know the church and organized religion in other parts of the world is thriving, is the organized religion, and I'm sure the rabbi can speak upon from a synagogue perspective, but do you see organized religion in general in America surviving or thriving, and why is that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. When you talk to people, they tell you that the average Sunday attendance at any church in the country, regardless of the denomination, is 70 people. Now, obviously, that includes the rural areas where there are smaller country churches. That includes, you know, the large cities where there are big parishes, you know. So when you look at the average being 70, it tells you that there's a significant number of people in our culture, in our society, that are not connecting with their house of worship. They're just not there. So you look at whether it's Judaism or Christianity, how many people worship on a regular basis. And our roles are large, but then the number of people that actually show up is much smaller. So I would say to you that, is it surviving? I think in some places it's thriving, where there's creativity, where there are things being done to attract the younger generation, where there are children and youth programs, where there are things that are really working, where there's outreach, and people are involved in helping the poor or helping those in need. Obviously, in those places, the church will thrive. But in places where we're just doing same old, I'm not sure what we can do. Because I can tell you this, there's an old axiom that I've always thought about when it comes to church and synagogue and people practicing their faith. I always say, if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to keep getting what we're getting. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that. I do believe that we have not looked at the 21st century with any real seriousness when it comes to church, because we think, oh, we've always done it this way. You know, we've always done it this way. Well, yeah, I mean, there's some things that we'll always do a certain way, but there's no doubt that the 21st century believer, regardless of tradition, is going to require some a different approach. You know, and I do believe that unless we embrace that approach, we are, you know, we're in an uphill battle that we may just not be able to win.
And I'm sure that answer of what that approach is changes no matter what context you're in. You know, it depends if you're in Western Kentucky or if you're in New York City, that answer is going to look differently. But if we, you know, a lot of times I could just speak from a denominational perspective, and Rabbi, you as well, is that, that, you know, we, yeah, a lot of it, we have this sacred tradition that we keep on doing what we do, and but we're trying to, as at the same time, be open and innovative and creative, and there's a tension within the church and the synagogue, I would assume, itself, that some people are like, no, this is who we are, this is what we do, why would we want to change that?
You know, it's interesting Judaically, especially from a Reform perspective, that the Reform movement, you know, many years ago, kind of had that same transition of no longer were we going to the rabbis of these communities to say, what is it that your community needs? And we shifted from a very rabbinic-centered model towards a congregational model, actually going into the communities, into our synagogues, and saying to our membership, what is it that we are providing that is great, and what can we enhance and improve on? That's and good. Really listening to our communities rather than the rabbis, who are there as obviously, you know, that notion of being the spokesperson for the synagogue, but really looking deeper into the community as to what's working, what's not working, how can we improve, and what can we do dynamically that is different?
Yeah. Yeah. And Padre, would you agree with that? That sometimes I think that sometimes the, you know, if I'm going to criticize my own denomination, is that sometimes we were talking this yesterday on the phone call that we had with you about liturgy, about it's the work of the people, and oftentimes that we're the work of the people, though, is that we're just listening to maybe our own congregants as opposed to what are the people outside who I don't think are all atheists but are seeking a relationship with the higher power. What do they want and seek? How can we begin to, I don't want to say it, to transform ourselves, but what do we do to help them, to invite them, or to meet them where they're at? Because they're seeking a relationship with God, and the church is supposed to be facilitating and helping that. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, this is what I hear. I want to be spiritual, but not necessarily religious. Or I'm spiritual, but not religious. Well, at the end of the day, let's think about it. You look at any faith leader of any tradition, whether it's Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Mother Teresa of Calcutta, or all of them were closely associated to their religious tradition. None of them worked as independent spiritual agents. None of them. So I say to you, you know, while we all would like to think of ourselves as being more spiritual than religious, the fact is we are religious. We have a religious tradition, a background that we should not reject. What I think needs to happen, though, and maybe this is what's different from religion in the past, is that, you know, we no longer have these sacred moments or sacred times that are set aside for religious and, church and synagogue type activities.
You mean it's a society?
The rabbi knows this from Saturdays, of course, from the Shabbat, but, you know, we get Sundays. You look now on any major city, and they have all these sports games mm-hmm. for kids going on at the time that every kid in the past used to go to church. Yeah. And you say, well, why is this happening? Well, it's happening because a lot of people just don't value, you know, going to church or synagogue or going to any kind of religious instruction on a regular basis. And so what's happening is the 21st century believer has to be, in my opinion, much more bold and intentional in inviting others to this relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
absolutely.
Because the truth is, 75 or 76%, I believe, of people who go to church for the first time tell you they went because someone invited them. Yep. It wasn't because of a flyer. It wasn't because of a postcard. It wasn't because they woke up one morning and decided they felt spiritual and they're going to go. 75% of people report that they go because someone invited them to go with them. Mm-hmm. Someone told them, this is important to me. Maybe it can be important to you. Would you come? And that's what we need. We're going to need in the future more and more believers who say, because this relationship and this thing is important to me, I'm going to share this with someone else. That's the only way it's ever happened, if you think about it. And so at this stage of the game, that's where we're at. Will there be a pendulum swing in our society where young people and young adults and others will, and families will begin to look for spiritual things? I hope so. I hope it won't take a national tragedy like 9/11 for it to happen. I remember at 9/11, the churches were packed. I'm sure the synagogues mm-hmm. were packed.
Absolutely.
And everybody just started praying and everybody started showing up. I hope it doesn't take something as tragic as that for people to decide that they have to have a spiritual reawakening.
Right.
But I do believe it's going to happen. I do believe that the pendulum swings, and now this may be a time of religious, spiritual apathy. I think we'll come to a time of spiritual renewal.
Father, that was beautifully stated. And thank you, because I wish we had more time to just continue on with this. But unfortunately, our producer, Miggity Mike, the man, is sitting there just counting down minutes and throwing tomatoes at us. So it's good you're not in the studio, or you'd have to go to the laundry
room,
and clean yourself with a nice dry cleaning. But in any event, we hope to have you back on in the future. Just God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on here and such great words of wisdom. We've been looking forward to this. Any final words, Rabbi, for Padre Roberto?
Well, I think just the last comment that he had mentioned, which I think is vital, it's based on relationships, and it's based on, not a text, not a phone call, but that personal connection to say, hey, this is important to me. Maybe you'd get something out of it. Maybe you won't. But you know what? Come see the power and the meaning behind what is so important to me. And I think it is through those personal relationships that, we see the same thing in synagogues of, 75 people that join us on an average Shabbat evening. What can we do to encourage more? It's through those personal relationships.
Well, God bless you, Padre Alberto. Have a beautiful
life.
I think today might be your Sabbath, so thank you for being with us today, and have a blessed Eucharist on Sunday with your wonderful congregation, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, and Rabbi, Shabbat Shalom to you.
Thank you.
And I wish you guys all the best. This is a wonderful program. I hope a lot of people can come together in our society like this, beyond faith tradition, and just talk about important matters, because that's what we need.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. God bless you, my brother.
Thank you.
God
so
bless.
Before we tap out here, I know that there's a couple things going on here. I know for us, we have a food packing event happening on Sunday, right after church. So from 11:30 to 1 over at Stewart Middle, we'll be packing food for Backpack Buddies. So please come join us and pack some food. This is so no kid goes hungry in Martin County. And Rabbi, you have some events.
So we have a couple events coming up next week on Thursday, on Valentine's Day at 2:21 p.m. We're asking people to come around 2 o'clock to join us as we remember 1 year on since the Parkland shooting. So we're having a memorial service in our temple. It is open to the wider community. And also on the 15th, the night after, we have a Holocaust Torah to which we are rededicating and rebirthing to the congregation. I hope you will join us for that. That is at 7:30 p.m. on Friday night, next Friday. If you join us for some or all of our events, we hope that it is meaningful and valuable for you.
God bless you all. Reach across the aisle, love one another, turn to someone today and say, I love you, and see what happens. Hopefully, they won't think it's too weird. God bless you all. Share the love of God, and we'll see you next Friday at 9 a.m.